Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name is Nigel Jones and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast where we're going to be discussing the increasing pressure that dentists are under when it comes to regulation and the evolving kind of regulatory environment in which they're working. And we're going to be doing that in the company of John Milne. Welcome, John. Very good to have you with us.
A pleasure.
I wonder if you could, for those few people that may not be familiar with your background, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm John Milne. I'm the Senior National Dental Advisor at the Care Quality Commission. I'm also a practicing dentist in Wakefield in West Yorkshire. I've had plenty of experience around dentistry, being an LDC chair, also being a dental advisor for PCTs when they existed. And perhaps I'm more widely known for my role when I was chair of general dental practice at the BDA.
Excellent. Well, the subject, as I mentioned, is about regulation, and I'm obviously really interested in your role at the CQC. What do you think has been the impact of the CQC on dentistry since its arrival?
Well, it's been a bit mixed because CQC wasn't welcomed at first. And in fact, there's quite an irony because when CQC first came into dentistry, when I was working with the BDA, I was opposed to the CQ being involved in dentistry in the first place. But that was a battle that I lost, and CQC was introduced to dentistry. One of the interesting things about that, though, was at the time it was introduced, there were plans to abolish primary care trusts, PCTs, for the NHS. And that meant that there was going to be a degree of oversight of the dental profession that was lost when that happened. And to a degree then, CQC picked up that oversight role and perhaps expanded it more because CQC was given the remit of regulating private dentistry as well as NHS dentistry. So the private dentistry regulation was for the first time. There's been a fair amount of perception that CQC is to be feared, and certainly CQC didn't get off to a very good start. The people who were doing the inspections didn't always have experience of dentistry or dental practices. But gradually that began to change, and certainly when I was at BDA I noticed that change happening. And hopefully since I've joined CQC that change has been continued. So, impact of CQC on dentistry. I think it's been a catalyst for improvement in some ways. I think we're at the beginning of that process rather than the end. But the way CQC works in having five key questions that we ask of practices: are they safe, caring, responsive, effective and well-led? Those things actually act as a focus for practices to think about what they do, why they do it and how they do it. And I think the practices that do that have been able to bring about improvements in the patient care.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point because it seems to me that the CQC is focused a lot on the running of the practice, the business aspects of it, as much as specifically patient interactions, patient care, patient experience. And I think it does seem to me to have been a catalyst for change and for thought in a more commercial way than a lot of dentists have done. And I was going to ask a question actually about, because it felt when CQC first arrived that there was a lot of applying of experiences and learnings from maybe a hospital type environment, and how well it's then adapted to these, which is a series of small businesses dotted around the country.
I think it took a while for the CQC process to adapt, but within the last 3 years, certainly since 2015, we've developed a team that's got much more specific expertise in dentistry. And so the inspectors themselves mostly concentrate on dentistry. The professional advisors that they take with them, and that happens now in virtually every practice inspection, they're dental professionals of one sort or another. The majority are dentists, but we also have some hygienists, some therapists, a couple of practice managers and some dental nurses. So the team that accompany our inspector have knowledge about how practices run, Most of them are still in practice themselves, and so they live and breathe the day-to-day work of a dental practice in both NHS and private, or mixed, as many practices are. And so I think that evolution that's happened in the last 3 years, I think, has been key to how well the process has been going for us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It felt like there was a lack of empathy in the very early days. Whereas, as you say, introducing those people that are kind of living it day to day gets over that completely. Mm. It that very much seems to be the approach I see. So when, as things have evolved, I mean, I remember listening to you give a presentation not that long ago where you were highlighting how few practices actually ended up with any significant issues. In fact, something like 2%, I think, of all the practices that were visited by the CQC, which would suggest that actually, by and large, dentistry is performing pretty well. What areas do you think would be those of a priority to focus on?
Well, the first thing is we have to celebrate the really good things that go on. You're right to point out that the vast majority of dental practices are okay. It's a little bit more than 2 or 3%. It's actually about 10% where there are some issues that need to be worked on with the practices. But the real celebratory point there is that thick end of 90% of practices need no action from CQC at all. Certainly no regulatory action. We do try and focus on improvement and encouraging practices to improve. So, you know, the practices where there's been no regulatory action will sometimes make suggestions. In other words, you might think about getting a bit more training in fire regulations, for instance, or something like that. In terms of where we find one of the most issues in those small number of practices where there are issues, they're mostly concentrated on the safety elements of practice. So, for instance, sometimes it's quite simple stuff that's easy to fix, like actually getting the right emergency drugs in your drugs kit, checking that they haven't gone past their expiry date, and things like that. I think they're relatively easy and simple to do. Some things need a little bit more work, maybe around cross-infection control and keeping up to date with the current recommendations and guidance that's out there around cross-infection control. So the safety element is one, and some things that people don't always see as being part of the safe environment might be safeguarding, how vulnerable people are protected, also in terms of safeguarding of whether our staff have had DBS checks and we can demonstrate that they're safe to work with the public in the healthcare industry or in the profession that we are as dentists. The other element that sometimes needs more attention in practices, and probably more so than safety, is that of leadership and management. Sometimes the things that go wrong in safety are a function of the fact that the leadership and the management aren't focused on all the right things. So, for instance, those emergency drugs that are out of date, they're out of date because no one's checked. They're out of date because the system or process for looking at those drugs isn't working right. And that's quite a difficult one, I think, as dentistry is emerging, because the dentistry is changing, isn't it, as we all know. There are fewer small practices, and sometimes the leadership can be remote from the individual practices out there. So everyone's always expecting someone else to do that job, not me. Yeah. And so I guess one of the things that we'd try and encourage people to do is say, well, actually, leadership's a part of everyone who's involved in the practice, for the whole practice team.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because I guess in part you're alluding to the prevalence now of the dental chains and actually where the chain of commands are there and the leadership there, which I think is a really interesting topic. But even within a practice, I think it can be challenging, because I'm not sure the role of a practice manager was ever clearly defined. It's sort of something that just sort of happened, and yet actually in the context of what the CQC are looking for, I don't know, do you get a sense that there is a need for more focused training for practice managers?
I think I'd agree with that, yes. And certainly within the practice where I work, we've got a great practice manager. She's empowered. We give, you know, she's got the ability to make change where it's needed. And she's undergone a good series of training courses and some qualifications to help her in that role. And I think we do find that where practice managers are empowered to make change, that's where we find the fewest problems. I don't think the practice manager role is one that you can just give to a nurse without any thought or something like that. It does need training, and the people who take on the role do need to be equipped.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of being well led, is that you're identifying the right people and give them the right level of empowerment to be able to make the kind of decisions, like putting in place a process for checking emergency drugs.
And that's one of the difficulties, I think, that can arise as the infrastructure of the profession changes with the bigger groups. You know, if the autoclave stops working and it takes 3 weeks to get a replacement, then patient care is going to be compromised, isn't it? And so actually the empowerment level at the practice level is quite a key part to practices delivering safe and effective services.
You mentioned autoclaves there, and earlier on you were talking about cross-infection control. That seems to me to be quite a contentious area for a lot of the profession, where you get this sense that they think that the various requirements are overkill, and there's this sort of disproportionate focus on dentistry compared to other industries, like the restaurant business, for example. Well, how do the CQC team handle that when they're getting pushback from...
Well, I think the restaurant industry isn't doing surgical procedures unless you accidentally slip.
Yeah.
And so I think the level of cross-infection and sterility I think needs to be more important, more well-defined than you'd find in the restaurant industry. The issue of... I think it's a little bit of an issue about proportionality around cross-infection control. And I think probably the safest way of thinking about it is, if this procedure was being done on me, would I prefer it to be done with instruments that have been cleaned properly, that have been sterilised properly, to reduce the chances of me picking up a blood-borne virus or something like that? And I think I'm of an age of a dentist where, when we first started in dentistry, cross-infection was perhaps less rigorous than it is now. And I think in the age of the blood-borne virus and things like that, I think it behoves us to be careful.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned there about the changes, and actually it does feel, certainly in the sort of 27 years that I've been working in the profession, actually there's been substantial change in terms of the things that practice owners have to think about. Even things like GDPR is obviously a very important topic right now as we speak. What do you think of, what do you think the future for the regulation of the profession is? Because they're almost beholden to so many different people. How do we bring that all together in the most efficient way?
Well, we've been trying at CQC to get the regulators together to act in a more coherent way, because one of the sad things that can happen is that each of the regulators who can make your life truly miserable may sometimes turn up one after the other, and that just looks to me as a way of piling stress upon stress upon stress to a profession that is already working in a difficult environment for all sorts of reasons, really. So what we've tried to do at CQC is establish a thing called the Regulation of Dental Services Programme Board. Trips off the tongue really well, doesn't it? But the aim of that has actually been to get the GDC and NHS England and ourselves to try and think more strategically about which is the best organisation to deal with an issue when it arises. So, for instance, if it's an NHS contract issue, then really that's something for NHS England. If it's a patient safety cross-infection issue, then that's probably one for us to take a look at. We need to try and avoid the duplication. If it's an issue of whether an individual's fitness to practice might be impaired or not, then clearly that's a GDC issue. And so rather than all three acting, it will be better if one takes the lead in a particular place. And so we've been making progress in this over the last couple of years. I think it will reduce some of the duplication. It's early days yet. It actually takes a bit of courage for one regulator to say, do you know what? This is one that is better if you look at rather than us.
And does that actually happen at the moment then? Are there instances where the CQC have stepped aside, as it were? Or
There have been instances where NHS England and CQC and GDC have agreed, we call it a risk and oversight group, and these have been established at both at national level and in four of the four regions that CQC operates. So relatively senior staff and people on the ground, inspection managers and the like, will get together with people from NHS England, occasionally from GDC, and we'll come to such an arrangement that say, right, this concern has been brought to our attention, it will be better if you deal with it in the first instance. And that's been good to see, but it's still an early stage, and we are committed to the idea of reducing the multiple jeopardy.
Yeah, so you'll be only too well aware of the you alluded to it earlier on about the stress that the profession are feeling. And I know particularly the GDC have come in for some criticism in terms of the fitness to practice proceedings and the way that process piles the pressure on. What about the involvement of somebody or an organisation like Health Watch? How do you weave all of that together?
Well, Health Watch are actually an alongside type subsidiary under the CQC's banner, and so we do work fairly closely with Health Watch. Health Watch have got limited powers, so Health Watch won't come and inspect your surgery or something like that, but they may well come into the practice and just observe how patients are being looked at. And of course they're only allowed to look at NHS, so we do work collaboratively with Health Watch.
Yeah, and I also think that's potentially an additional visit on top of other visits. And
yeah, and I think and I'm certainly aware of the danger of that being a burden. In fairness, Health Watch don't visit that many dental practices compared to CQC, or indeed NHS England.
And also, to be fair, I've seen feedback or heard feedback directly myself where they actually found the Health Watch presence a helpful thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't seen to be intrusive. It was handled very well. So, but it's just this sort of overall sense that actually there's quite a few people taking an interest in dental practices. So that's pretty encouraging what you were describing before.
Yeah.
Slow progress.
And Health Watch are involved in the Regulating Dental Services Programme Board, so they're sitting on the meeting, so they're well aware of our aim to reduce duplication.
So what would you say, John, to a person contemplating a career in dentistry but actually nervous about where this direction of travel is taking us in terms of regulation?
I think the first thing I'd say is that If you concentrate on acquiring the clinical skills and the communication skills, that those two things will stand you in good stead. The regulation stuff, of course, you need to be aware of it because it's your own personal professional responsibility. But by and large, you're less likely to come to the interest of the GDC or the CQC, if your communication skills are good, if you're delivering good clinical care, and so on. But I think the most dangerous thing is where dentists try and think, well, actually, that regulatory side of it is nothing to do with me. Actually, it is the safety of patient care, the effectiveness of patient care are part of all our responsibilities. So I wouldn't say to a young dentist, go and do another job. I'd encourage them into dentistry. It's still a great profession. The public still need us. And I think the regulators, such as GDC and CQC, I think we're trying to evolve in such a way to reduce the fear element that's there. No one wants to be inspected. No one wants to be put under the microscope. But I think the way in which the regulators do it is so important. And I certainly have seen the way that CQC have been changing. I think it's been good. And I think GDC are beginning also to change as well.
That's really good to hear. And certainly from my perspective, I completely agree with the observation about the CQC having adapted. And certainly there seem to be signs, as you say, the GDC are following suit. So Thank you very much, John. I've really enjoyed talking to you today. That's been very, very interesting.
It's been my pleasure.